हरि ओम सहनावावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
In Dwarka?
Yes.
Yes. In Dwarka, all of the above types of Parishad and Anuga devotees can be found. Next, Rupa Goswami explains that all the devotees in Priti Bhakti Rasa share in common the same Udipanas. Krishna's mercy, attaining his foot dust or food remnants, and association with Krishna's devotees, are some of the unique Udipan's stimuli for this rasa, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3.2.57. Udipanas such as attaining Krishna's mercy are not Udipanas for Vatsalya rasa at all. At a particular time, these Udipanas unique to Dasya rasa occur. Association with devotees of Krishna implies, in this case, special types of association with Dasya Bhaktas. Durgama Sangha, Sangamani Tika 3257. The Stai Bhava Priti Ras. Eagerness to execute service with respect and trembling with eagerness because of knowledge of the Lord's greatness is the quality of Sambrahma. Priti combined with this Sambrahma is called Sambrahma Priti. The learned call this Sambrahma Priti the Stai Bhava of Priti Rasa. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3276. In the chapter on Bhava in general, 136, it was explained that Bhava, Stai Bhava, appears when sadhana, usual, or by mercy, rare, appears by sadhana or mercy. This describes the process by which rati arises for the ashritas and others described in this chapter, who are sadhana siddhas. However, the rati of parishads and anugas described in this chapter is caused only by samskaras, or impressions, since all the examples given were nitya siddhas. Seeing and hearing about Krishna stimulates the impressions. Srila Chakravarti Thakur adds, the cause of rati for the ashritas and others is described in the section on bhava. However, the cause of the appearance of rati for the parishads and others, anugas, are eternally perfect impressions, anadi, siddha, samskara. Their former impressions are aroused simply by hearing about and seeing Krishna. Bhakti Sar Pradarshini Tika 3276. Right, so it seems the first two is by sadhana or mercy they get there. The last two means that they're eternal associates. Interesting, they use the word anadi, siddha samskara. So the point is the anadi is not about time factor. Anadi is about the spiritual world. Because generally, because you can't translate time from the spiritual world into the material. Is that? Yes, so therefore, since there's no comparison, therefore the word anadi is used. Right? You know, it's not anadi means it's once forever been either there or here. It's a matter of, since the position of either deciding to stay in the spiritual world or deciding to come to the material world starts there, it's not within material time. So it's within eternal time. So within eternal time, then you have made this decision. Therefore, or not. Does that make sense? Yeah. Otherwise, some whole books have been written on this one word, anadi. Next, the acharyas analyze the gradual elevation of priti rasa bhakta to prema and beyond. Sambrahma priti gradually increases in three stages to prema, sneha, and finally raga. Footnote 9. In Madhura Rasa, the order of development is Madhura Rati, Prema, Sneha, Mana, Pranaya, Raga, Anuraga, and Mahabhava. Ujjwala Nilamani, 1459. Right, so they get up to this point where you see Raga. That's as high as they go. Does that make sense? So the others will get up to different, like we saw somewhere, like Prema is the platform of pure love. Right, so then next is sneha, and then you see ragas after that. So they'll get up to that point. But then beyond that, anuraga, mahabhava, they don't get to. When sambrahma priti becomes firmly fixed, no doubt that it will with no doubt that it will decrease, it is called prema. The anubhavas are such things as complete attachment to the Lord. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3.2.78.81. When this sambrahma priti becomes very fixed, and one is convinced that it can never decrease, it's called prema. Durgama sangamani tika 3.2.81. This sambrahma priti manifests as prema in the adikritas and ashritas. In the Parishas, it manifests as sneha. And in Parikit, Daruka and Uddhava, Parishadas, it manifests as raga, footnote 10. Raga is defined in the context as follows. Raga, that sneha which turns sorrow into happiness by a slight appearance of Krishna, is called raga. In this state of raga, the devotee will do anything for the pleasure of Krishna, even giving up his life. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3.2.87. Jiva Goswami explains, sneha becomes raga. How does it do so? When sneha causes sorrow to become happiness just by a moment's association with Krishna, either through his direct presence, through internal manifestation, or by a show of mercy, it is called raga. In that state, he will do anything, even giving up his life, for pleasing the Lord. But without that relationship to Krishna, any happiness becomes sorrow. That is the nature of sneha. Right? Even if something that would make you happy, you're not happy if Krishna's not there or involved. Durgama Sangamani Tika 3.2.87.
Sneha is usually attributed to God.
No. Sneha, as we see, has been used a lot in this friendship, it was used before, so in these rakas like that. I'm not sure how high. Rupa Goswami mentions what are the levels that each rasa goes to. You know, because the point is these levels match the nature of that's the sthayi bhava. Right? So it goes together on what kind of things inspire them, what levels, what are the manifestations of that affection and all that. So they all go together. Raga also manifests in the anugas. When raga appears in many anugas, in Braja says as raktaka, the dasi bhava becomes mixed with sakya. So it seems that it's, you know, that has that element of the higher. So then they become, what was that term they used? Not sankirtan, sankula. And then you get mixed rasas. Though there's a prominence because raktaka will be known as a servant. But it becomes mixed with this sakya aspect. Jiva Goswami elaborates in his commentary to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3291. This verse describes the condition of the Adikritas, Ashritas, Parishadas, and Anugas. Generally, the Adikritas and Ashritas manifest prema, and the Parishads in Dwarka manifest sneha. The word generally is used because the inhabitants of Dwarka, Daruka and Uddhava, also have a touch of rag, as in the following example. O lotus-eyed Lord, whenever you go away to Mathura, Vrindavan, or Hastinapur to meet your friends and relatives, every moment of your absence seems like a million years. O infallible one, at that time our eyes become useless, as if bereft of sun. Uddhava's devotional ecstasies are further illustrated as follows. On seeing Krishna, Uddhava offered a gift in the form of the best river of tears, and his voice choked when he began to recite prayers using sweet, attractive words and sweet tone. His body erupted in goosebumps, becoming completely stunned. He radiated superiority over all other devotees. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3286. Uddhava possessed an extremely sweet tone in his voice, generated from his affection. His words were sweet and attractive by nature. However, the order of syllables became disarrayed, lutita, within that throat, kanta garva, Durgama Sangami Tita 3286. Jiva Goswami gives more examples in his commentary. Durgama Sangamani Tita 3292. Sugadeva Goswami said, thus addressed by Krishna, whose mind was attractive with prema, Uddhava circumambulated the Lord and then fell down, placing his head upon the Lord's feet. Uddhava, subject to the dualities arising from prema, his mind melting at the time of departure, drenched the Lord's lotus feet with his tears. Greatly fearing separation from him, for whom he felt much indestructible affection, Uddhava was distraught, and he could not give up the Lord's company. Finally, feeling great pain, he bowed down to the Lord again and again, placed the slippers of his master upon his head, and departed. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:29-45-46. An example, seeing the Lord coming out of the inner chambers, Uddhava's eyes became filled with tears and his voice choked up. Closing his eyes slightly, he embraced the Lord in his heart. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3292, footnote 11. Embracing the Lord is a sign of Shakya, friendship. Bhakti Sara Pradarshini Tika 3292. Though pranaya is possible in some of the anugas in Braj, Uddhava also is famous for possessing a portion of pranaya. Right? Because pranaya was, where was pranaya? Pranaya was after man, just before raga.
That's the difference between him and Arjuna?
You get the idea. Arjuna goes up to sneha. He goes up to pranaya and rag.
Yes.
Okay. Pranaya is defined as friendship with absence of reverence. It appears in the shakas. When Shakyarati is completely free of any touch of respect, though there are clear opportunities to show respect, it is called pranaya. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 33108. Right, because you might come into a situation where you're with the friend and you're going along, and then suddenly other people come and are very respectful to them and everything like that. So you could also be like that. But instead, you know, after all that's kind of moved on, then you just kind of whack them on the back and, you know, something, you know, generally sense. So that's the entire aspect. You know, you don't worry about the kind of detail. This is illustrated in the following verse. My dear Uddhava, O beloved of the Yadu dynasty, because you are my servant, well-wisher, and friend, I shall now speak to you the most confidential knowledge. Please hear as I explain these great mysteries to you. 11:11:49. Right, so he has servant, well-wisher, and friend. So it touches on that. So it has those aspects. So in this case, it's not that in his position it goes above the standard. It's that it's mixed with the next rasa above. Right, and so then you can say that this rasa goes up to here, this one to here, this one. But it just means it becomes mixed, so then it has those elements. But it's not all the time. It's just occasional situations that you'll see. Next, Rupa Goswami offers an analysis of the devotee's union with and separation from the Lord. In Madhura Rasa, these concepts are referred to as Sambhoga and Vipralamba. While in the context of Dasya Rasa, they are referred to as Yoga and Viyoga. Uddhava is the subject of the following Vyabhichari Bhava in separation, Viyoga. An example of Unmada, insanity, in Viyoga. When his personal deity went away, Uddhava became confused in mind. Look, seeing a fresh cloud on Raivata Mountain, he praised it, frolicking about and offering his respects to it. I'm not sure if the look needs to be there. Somebody else is talking. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindha 3.2.125. However, Uddhava is best known for his union, yoga, with Krishna. In fact, he is the archetypical example of sthiti, a specific type of yoga characterized by permanent residence with the Lord. Meeting with Krishna is called yoga. There are three types of yoga, siddhi, tushti, and sthiti. Attaining the Lord after a state of great longing and not having met him before is called siddhi, attaining one's desires. Meeting Krishna after separation from him is called tushti. The wise call living together with Krishna permanently, sthiti. Okay. Right, so therefore, it's srup siddhi, or one attains siddhi, means that one attains one's desire after a long time. That Uddhava is the emblem of union is illustrated in Hamsa Duda, verse 50. That cruel person, given a fearful name by the gopis, Akrura, leaning against a jewel pillar, is discussing with Krishna about the Kurus. The disciple of Brihaspati, Uddhava, is sitting on the golden floor and is absorbed in massaging the lotus feet of the Lord. Next, Rupa Goswami describes, right, so in other words, Krishna's talking with Akrura about the Kurus, right, because he was sent to go there and see what's happening in Hastinapur, right, because Krishna's understood that there's, it's not going well, some trouble is there, the Pandavas aren't being taken care of properly, so then he sends a crew to go assess the situation. So when he comes back and he's discussing this, so it'll be more of a confidential or more personal kind of thing, then Uddhava's there sitting on the floor massaging the Lord's feet. So what the conversation is in that doesn't change that the fact that he's there. So he's just part of the scene. Right? So that'll be sthiti. He's just always there. So he's not going to get in the way of that because he's just there as one of the associates of the Lord. He's not going to, therefore, then, discuss it with someone else or use it in any other kind of social or political way. Does that make sense?
So, Maharaj, inside the Yadu dynasty, Uddhava is a special role.
Like within the Yadu dynasty, he is a special.
He's very advanced.
Yes, he's considered of those in Dwarka the most, advanced devotee.
Only he can have this relation of sthiti with Krishna.
That I'm not sure. He's the archetypical example, but that means that he's like your topmost or your main example.
Yes.
But it doesn't mean that others don't have the position.
Yes.
Because a lot of times, unless they're very prominent, you don't hear about them. They're always around. Like when Krishna's in his house, you don't hear much about Raktaka and his others. But they're always there because they're the house servants. So wherever he is, you know, then somebody's going to be around. But you don't hear about them. You know what I'm saying? You just hear about, like, here, these prominent
guys.
Yes.
Yes. Often mentioned as a must. The best devotees, you know, of those who are outside of Vrindavan. But what about Krishna's queens?
I think they're in a different category. So I don't think we're, you know, it's just like you hear about Hanuman, you know, but there's no discussion about, you know, Lakshman or Sita.
Yes.
You know, so it's just. And you also hear that sometimes when you're dealing with these levels, that even sometimes they're more dear than Lakshmi.
Yes.
You know, like Prahlad Maharaj. So you may have that. But in Dwarka, I'm not sure how that's working. Because we'll generally take their form within Vrindavan as the main one. Because there, then they're discussed as the prominent. Right? Because they're already in those pastimes, because he has the pastimes in Dwarka, so they come to assist. But it's not necessarily they're the prominent ones in the Dwarka Lila. Now and again, Satyabhama is a little bit more, or occasionally Rukmini, but generally you always just hear about the Yadus and Uddhava and other devotees. Because that's the main Dwarka Leelas around that. Because if you're going to have the conjugal pastime, then it's more prominent in Vrindavan.
Yeah. It is still different than Vaikuntha, because they live together in all the palaces, Krishna
yes.
and his queens.
Yes.
Because in Vaikuntha, they basically they live separately. Lakshmi and Narayan.
Yeah, they have the bedroom place they have is you get the idea that they're together.
Yeah.
But otherwise, yes, they're staying, their place of the worship are in two different places.
Yeah.
So unless the acharyas bring it up, then you don't get it. Okay, next, Rupa Goswami defines the anubhavas, external manifestations. 13. These are defined as follows. Anubhavas refers to those things which express the bhava situated within the heart. They are predominantly external transformations and are thus called udbhasvara, shining in the body. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindha 221. So they're the mood within the heart that you then you see, whatever is the physical manifestation. Means when the Udipan is there, then the manifestation of that ecstasy and that interaction with that mood in the heart, what physical symptoms you see, that's anubhava. Right? So that's slightly different than the sattvika bhavas, because the sattvika bhavas means the life airs are generating them, rather than a mood. Does that make sense? So the choking of the voice, these things, that's the life airs are doing. But the other one's more just the expression of a mood, so they do something interesting. And the vyavicharyas are small ones within a bigger one. I can see as Uddhava feeling separation. That's the main aspect, or in this, yeah. Then there's that small vyavichari bhava of madness when he sees a rain cloud over Raivata mountain, and then he thinks it's Krishna, so he's offering his respects and everything. You know, but how long that lasts? So it's just a moment; it passes. So that's vyavichari. Does this make sense? Some distinction between the bhavas. Okay. So the Anubhavas, next Rupa Goswami describes the Anubhavas manifested by the Yadavas, the Anubhavas, being completely involved in serving according to one's capacity, friendship, one's capacity, friendship with the Lord's servants, with absence of even a trace of envy on seeing the excellence of others' service, and being fixed in the love, which are all considered citta, are the special Anubhavas of the dasas. Okay, being completely involved in serving according, I don't get there was a capacity, friendship, with the absence of even a trace of envy on seeing the excellence of others' service. Okay, this is called citta. 14. Citta bhavas are defined as follows. Anubhavas are of two types, with the suitable names of citta, cool, with lack of bodily movement, and kshepana, meaning throwing about, involving distinct bodily movements. Citta includes singing, yawning, breathing heavily, disregarding others, drooling and smiling. Kshepana includes dancing, rolling on the ground, shouting, stretching the body, bellowing, loud, laughing, whirling about and having hiccups. Okay. Bhaktarasamrita Sindhu 223. Okay. So then here that these the yadas, it means the dasas, then it's ashita, so it's cool. Because otherwise, if you do these other things, it doesn't fit in a formal environment. Yes. Right? So you would keep to these more, how do you say, lighter manifestations, or cool manifestations. In association with Krishna, the Anubhavas of the Dasa Bhaktas are such things as carefully performing their services and sitting in front of him. And so it's just their natural response to interaction with Krishna. Right? So then their natural then Anubhavas are carefully performing their duty or sitting in front of him waiting for instruction or what they can do. In Dwarka, Dwarka is used as an example of being absorbed in service. When Dwarka was fanning Krishna with a chamara whisk, overcome with prema, his body became increasingly paralyzed. But because that bliss would be an obstacle in serving Krishna, he did not welcome that ecstasy. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3262. Right, so they prefer the means those things that don't get in the way of their service. Jiva Goswami comments, this means he did not welcome the increase of paralysis in his limbs due to prema. The meaning is as follows. Prema has two varieties of qualities, stumbha and other symptoms, and the desire to please the Lord. The servants cherish the desire to please the Lord because this fulfills the goal of serving the Lord. Right? They want to serve, so the opportunities to serve is what they want. They are not attached to the symptoms like paralysis because this can become an obstacle to service, right? Hard to do activity when you're paralyzed. Right? Thus, Dwarka did not welcome prema in his portion which causes paralysis, but he did welcome that part of prema which causes pleasure to the Lord. Right? Durgama Sangamani Tika 3262. Having better understood the exalted position of the Yadavas, we can now proceed with Sri Narad's meeting with the Muni. Sri Narad's meeting with the Muni.
He was in the assembly.
I'm not sure about Sri Narad's meeting with the Muni. Maybe that's why he's Narad Muni, because he's met the Munis. So. Narad Muni, you know, like
from that point.
Yeah, like you know, like I say. So, yeah, what is it? you know, sort of God, like Dolce, Gabbana, and you know, it's like that. So Narad, Muni, you know, it's different things. Sorry? Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe it's when the Yadavas meet with the Muni, I guess. That would be the more 99. Oh, okay. Okay.
Regarding the rupa, and he not welcoming the prema, prowess.
Yes, whatever. The prowess is aspect of the prema.
Okay, so isn't it that he is, as an eternal servant, he's always experiencing prema.
But not necessarily paralysis.
Yeah, sure. So that's why it's easier for him not to welcome this particular one at this particular moment, because this, his level is constant, very high.
And so,
for us, we don't experience anything, and then sometimes we experience a glimpse of something. Should we just talk?
Is it getting in the way of your service? So it's like this. It's like this. Next time you're personally fanning the Lord with the chamra, then, and you get paralysis, then you can decide for yourself. Okay. You just want to make sure you don't miss out on anything.
I'll keep it in mind, yes.
Yes, okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay, 99. When they brought paraphernalia for worship, the chief sage among the gods bowed his head to it with folded hands. Oh, he then stood up and humbly spoke to them at length. Okay, so they brought the paraphernalia to worship him, and he just respected it and then stood up and started speaking. Sri Narad said, O greatest receivers of the mercy of Krishna's lotus feet, you are all transcendental persons. Today, please be merciful to me. Please bless me that I may wander always throughout the universe, constantly singing your glories. Indeed, this family of the Yadavas is most praiseworthy. You are more radiant than the residents of Vaikuntha. By your grace, this world of men has surpassed Vaikuntha and attained supreme glory. Narad is surprised to see that the earthly inhabitants of Dwarka are still more exalted than Garuda and other Vaikuntha associates. The Yadavas have mercifully spread pure devotional service to Krishna throughout Martyaloka, the world of short-lived human beings. Thus they have made this mortal realm more splendorous than Vaikuntha. The devotees of Vaikuntha are certainly favored by the Supreme Lord, but not as much as the devotees of Dwarka. 102. Most fortunate Mother Earth, by your fruitful endeavors, these Yadavas have manifest upon your surface their birth, residence, and pleasing acts. The Supreme Lord Hari resides in their homes and enjoys with them unprecedented transcendental pastimes. Yeah, because she's the one who is having the difficulty. She went to Brahma, and by that, then the Lord kindly then sent all the devotees down, and then he came and appeared. So he's mentioning here that her endeavors are fruitful, because now all the Yadavas have come. Narada's shifting moods of ecstasy lead him momentarily to stop addressing the Yadavas and turn instead to the planet Earth, upon whom Sri Dwarka Dham has descended. The presiding goddess of the earth is certainly familiar with the leelas of Lord Narayan and Vaikuntha and the leelas of his various avatars. She has witnessed many of these pastimes, and from the Puranas she knows others. But what she sees now in the sacred district of Dwarka is altogether unprecedented. The Lord of the spiritual and material universes consorting with his servants as their intimate relative. Like it's always before, it's always formal. He's God and that whole mood of servantship. So that's what's unique here, is they're all in the mood of servants, but it has that aspect of that preeti, because it has that
affectionate intimacy is greater. It's not as formal. So this is special. You don't see this in Vaikuntha. 103 through 105. Krishna is now forgotten by Kunta, for he is bound by intense, unbreakable loving exchanges with these yadus. He sees the yadus, touches them, talks with them, sits with them. He eats and sleeps with them, follows them when they walk, takes part in their marriage ceremonies, and shares in their other activities of embodied life. These relations are more tangible than the yogi's union with him in meditation. Thus, by his pastimes, Krishna spreads among the yadus infinite pleasure, ever fresh and indescribable, destroying any desire they might have for heaven or liberation, and increasing more and more their devotion to him. Sri Krishna descended to earth not only for his own enjoyment, but also to give pleasure to his devotees. Some of the yadus might once have harbored desires to attain the higher celestial worlds and associate with Krishna there. Some of the yadus, in fact, had descended from the planets of the demigods. So in their human pastimes, they might naturally have felt an urge to return to heaven. But after they lived for some time with Krishna and Dwarka, such unsuitable desires in their hearts dissolved. The yadus lost every trace of interest in liberation from the cycle of samsara, because they wanted never to be deprived of the opportunity to take a birth again and again in the company of Krishna. Because we remember that when it was describing about the disappearance pastime, then the eternal associates, they stayed in Dwarka. While then those who had descended from the heavenly planets, they went to Prabhas. But because they had spent this time with Krishna, then after going back to the heavenly planets, when the heavenly planets from that time was finished, they went back to Godhead. Right? Rather than just on to, you know, more and more within the material world. Right, so then they're special in that way. Right. So then whatever desires they may have had before, then these disappear by being in Krishna's association. The yadu's meditation on Krishna is much more strongly focused than the dharana and samadhi of yogis. Whereas impersonal meditators fall prey to various distractions, even in their so-called perfection of samadhi, Krishna's devotees in Dwarka, in their Krishna samadhi, cannot be shaken in any way, at any time, by anyone or anything. Nothing can distract their meditation, because at every moment they experience the incomparable happiness of Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. Right, like, what was his name? Menaka and Vishwamitra. So the example is given, Vishwamitra is in meditation in samadhi, but just hearing the ankle bells or the bangles, then, you know, it's his samadhi is broken, right? But here is that you can't break their samadhi, because it's always about Krishna. That's the point. The devotee's samadhi is much greater than the yogi's, because you can't break that. And most don't even get to samadhi. Most get distracted by mystic, you know, yogic powers before they even get there. So when we describe Ashtanga Yoga, we're just describing how it works. But actually the amount of people that get up to samadhi is very rare, because most get distracted by yogic siddhis. And even those who do, then can still get, you know, once you get there, then you have Indra to worry about. Okay. To achieve limited versions of spiritual perfection with dimensions of happiness that are monotonous and meager compared to pure devotional service, conditioned souls must undergo disciplines like the eightfold yoga systems. The yadus, however, have purely spiritual bodies and therefore have no need to submit their bodies and minds to yoga discipline. They are eternal friends of Yogeshwara, the master of all yoga. Instead of struggling to cultivate some inward meditation in the company of Krishna, they effortlessly enjoy in various ways with all their senses. As recorded in Srimad Bhagavatam, King Yudhishthir tells the Yadavas, the water that has washed his feet, the words he speaks in the form of the revealed scriptures, and his fame as broadcast by the Vedas, these thoroughly purify this universe. Although the earth's good fortune was ravaged by time, the touch of his lotus feet has revitalized her, and thus she is raining down on us the fulfillment of all our desires. The same Lord Vishnu, who makes one forget the goals of heaven and liberation, has now entered into marital and blood relations with you, who otherwise travel on the hellish path of family life. Indeed, in these relationships, you see and touch him directly, walk beside him, converse with him, and together with him sit at ease, lie down to rest, and take your meals. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:82-29-30. In these two verses spoken during the meeting of Krishna's devotees at Kurukshetra, Maharaj Yudhishthira congratulates the Yadavas for the supreme fortune of their intimacy with Krishna. The water that has washed Krishna's feet in the form of the river Ganga purifies the whole universe of its sins. His instructions in the form of the Vedas educate human society to the standard of natural spiritual life, free from illusion. But despite his constant presence in these two forms, in course of time the earth picks up from the creatures she supports more sinful contamination than she can bear. Her glory then becomes a mere shadow of what it was. To deliver the earth from misfortune, therefore, Krishna appears in the Yadu dynasty just by the touch of his lotus feet. She regains her former strength and can at once shower the Lord's devotees with the fulfillment of their needs and desires. The Yadus especially are so satisfied living on the earth with Krishna that they entirely forget about heaven and liberation. They prefer to stay entangled in their relations with him through marriage and birth, right? Because here is that the entanglements in the family, the social scene, at some point one kind of wants to move on from that. It just gets, you know, so much to constantly be doing that. But here, the Yadavas, they're very comfortable in that. They're quite happy to be, you know, by family ties entangled with the Lord. So they have no problem at all, because it's all about the Lord. So then, that's the point. That's the problem here, is that the entanglement is not connected to the Lord. But what's connected to the Lord, then we don't see any problem. Like the Pandavas don't have any problem being together. You know, that family relationship and all these things, because it's all connected to the Lord. So that's the whole point, is when things are connected to the Lord, then what would be normally considered not or a problem in the material world is no longer a problem. Right, and things that would be considered very nice in the material world have no interest for them. Right? So the Yadavas, by their affection for Krishna, then they are not interested in all these happiness that comes from yoga or from liberation. They're just not important, because the taste from that is so minimal compared to the taste of Krishna consciousness that they're not interested. 106. While eating, sleeping, sitting, walking, speaking, bathing, enjoying diversions, the Yadus are so absorbed in pure love for Krishna that they even forget their own families and possessions. Love for Krishna is a deep ocean in which the pure devotees dive in their heart to their heart's content. Thus, fully immersed in Krishna consciousness, the Yadus were oblivious to their material assets, including their families and their own bodies. All the riches in this world could not divert their attention. Right, so many times, like, we'll be doing something, and it may be something really nice. We'll be at the temple, it's a kirtan, it's a fabulous kirtan, and then we think about something at the house. And, you know, so this has to be all that, what about, you know, and then it's gone. So for the Yadavas, then they're so absorbed that they never remember those things. You know, if they happen to be, when it's time that the court in the evening is over, and so Krishna goes back to his house, they go back to their homes. It's not that they can't remember where their house is, you know, because they're so absorbed and like that. You know, so they go. But the point is they never get distracted from their service to Krishna by thoughts of the home and family. Well, in the material world, then that very easily can happen. Right? So they don't. So when they're absorbed in Krishna consciousness, then they're fully absorbed. There's no... And it's already mentioned that, as Yudhishthira Maharaj is pointing out, because the earth, being very satisfied because of Krishna's touch, then all the facilities that is there is being given. Because otherwise, we see in Satya Yuga, this great facility, Treta Yuga, it's you know, pretty good. You know, Dwapara Yuga, it's okay. Kali Yuga, it's kind of, you know, needs some work. But here, it's because of the Lord being there, it's as if it's, you know, they have more opulence than heaven and anything like that. Does that make sense? So it's, they have all facility that anybody could ever want, but they forget about it because they're so absorbed in the service. Right? So it's not that they forget about the families and neglectful, they're just so absorbed in Krishna it doesn't distract them. Right? And then when they're home, then it's all connected to Krishna and then like that. Because if they didn't have homes, then how would they be able to sit in the court? Right? Because being able to sit in the court every day means that's your duty. And whose duty is it to sit in the court? Grihasthas, right? So therefore, for them to be family people, then this means they can sit with Krishna all day. Right? For the sages, they come in, they visit, you know, they get respected, they say a few wise words, and then they go back to their forest. Right? Does that make sense? Brahmacharis aren't there in the first place. They're off at the Gurukul. Does that make sense? So, therefore, it's, for them, it's the perfect situation. So for them, it's the opposite of entanglement. It's actually what is, you know, assisting in their... Does that make sense? So that's the thing. When things are connected to Krishna, they take on a whole different flavor. When they're not connected to Krishna, then all the anomalies that are there come up. Yes?
That's the meaning of picking up the thorn by the thorn.
Yes. But even here, it's beyond that. But that's for the devotees here, that's what it is that whatever the natural attachments and that is, then one engages those in the Lord's service. So that, also the example is given like the poison snake. If you break the fangs, then they're not, you know, even though they still have poison, you're not going to get affected by that poison because they can't bite you. So then the devotee's involvement in material life is like that. There is nothing to bother them because they're absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So then it's like that. But, like you said, the technique is you're taking out a thorn with a thorn. You know? So you're engaging. What causes your problem is what you're engaging to take out that problem. Right? But because it's connected to the Lord, that's why it gets the benefit. Otherwise, for the materialist, they can use it in naishkarmya for the effort for karma and jnana. But the difficulty is still all the difficulties remain. Like that. But for the devotee, then they're not. They're superficial. They're not really serious. Like that. It means because, you know, of our conditioning, we may still consider them serious, but they're not actually that serious. Does that make sense? Yeah.
I think previously Hanuman mentions that the family worship is more pleasing to the Lord than individual worship. Because he's saying that I'm Brahmachari, I'm on my own. But then the Pandavas, they do it together, so it's...
Oh, okay. Yeah. More people involved.
More people, and it's combined.
Yeah, so then here, Yadavas, then there's millions of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess if we take that, then it gets
there.
Yeah, because Prahlad is just him and his grandson. Like Hanuman is just him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then here the Pandavas are, there's actually six of them. And but it also mentions all the associates.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a group. So that's the idea of Sankirtan, that you do things together. So it's always more pleasing than just doing something yourself. You know, it still doesn't. But that's in the devotional attitude. It still doesn't necessarily mean that the principle in management, if you want something done right, you have to do it yourself, doesn't remain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we're just talking about that doing something cooperatively in a group devotionally, that's what's pleasing. Yeah, the material anomalies still may, you know, the. Organizing it still remains the same headache.
In the spiritual world, there's no headache, so that's the good thing.
The statement Narad parallels Sukadeva's words at the end of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, 10:90:46. The Vrishnis were so absorbed in Krishna consciousness that while sleeping, sitting, walking, conversing, playing, bathing, eating, and so on, they forgot their own bodies. That's somehow or another, that last part about forgetting their own bodies is not part of the Shema. The first part is, but the last part. Yeah. Thus Krishna once told his wife, Satya. You've noticed that this verse, this point has come up so many times. So that's why that's actually the main, I would say, of all the prayers, that's the main one. You know, so that's as close as they get. Huh? But what to do with it, that's another thing. Okay, he's telling Satya. Dear willing goddess, every one of these Yadavas is my eternal associate. They are always dear to me, and their virtues are equal to my own. O Ugrasena, king of exalted kings, who can describe the extent of your astonishing great fortune? Many other kings, including Yudhishthira, are subordinate to Maharaj Ugrasena. The special favor Krishna has shown him is visible to all but cannot be adequately described. 108. Oh, just see the utterly amazing, infinitely wonderful ways in which the Supreme Lord, Hari, submits to the love of his dear devotees. Krishna's mercy is the akara, or birthplace, of everything wondrously appreciated, appreciable. Oh, that's interesting. Just the word akara, the birthplace. Because in the, like in the North Indian lines of the sadhus, the groups are called akaras. You know? Like that. So that's the one thing they always, when you come to Kumbh Mela, they want to know what akara you're in. Like that. So we're what they would define as chagi.
Yes.
We're renunciates. We're in that line. Yeah. Like that. You explain, okay, we're, you know, Gaudi, oh, okay, Jagis, okay. I just want to make sure you have a group. Right. Hmm. All right, birthplace. Okay, because, yeah, from the Akara, that's where you elevate yourself. You actually come to spiritual. Yeah. His selfless concern for his devotees is always astonishing, especially when he willingly submits to their control. Right, so this is where you start to see that he's under control. So with the Pandavas, you see that there's an aspect of he's controlled by them. Right, below that he may be doing some service, but it's kind of like in his position as the Supreme Lord, he's showing special mercy. Like he's the doorman for Bali Maharaj, or like this, right? But in here, with the Pandavas, we see he's actually just rendering service, right? And then when you get to the Yadavas, then it's even more, because there, here it's that it doesn't really have that element of reverence to it. But with the Pandavas, sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Right, so the Pandavas are very much kind of a juncture between the Vaikuntha mood and the Goloka mood, like that. But here in Dwarka, we see that Goloka mood is much more prominent. Right, so even there, it even moves up into friendship sometimes. You know, that their moods, the moments of their ecstasy may have natures of Sakya. Even though they're actually servants. Mm-hmm. Does that
I still find it difficult to reconcile with Arjuna.
With Arjuna?
Yeah, because he seems to be so intimate with Krishna in his personal relationship. And here it's more, they say it's not, there's no reverence, but according to the descriptions of Uddhava and other Yadavas, there's a lot of reverence.
It's just the medium for it.
Right?
In other words, if you're working within majesty, then there must be the element of rules being a medium.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So Mathura and Dwarka are considered within majesty. So that's why sometimes the acharyas, they talk about Goloka and Gokula. Mm-hmm. You know, and here, so Gokula here means Braj, and Goloka means Mathura and Dwarka. But at other times, I mean Goloka meaning the whole thing, and then Boma Lila is Gokula. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, you have to know the context. But there's that flavor of the enthusiasm, because you see there's Arjuna, I think the highest one was Sneha, right? And these others, they're going up to Raga, or what was this before Raga? Pranaya, right? So that's the thing, is it's going just that touch more. There's that little bit more of the... Pranaya, friendship with absence of reverence. Because they generally, it will be intimate, but there's still that idea that, you know, he's the Lord, and so it may not, it doesn't appear that it gets that high, because Pranaya is after Sneha. So just, there, you know. Okay, when Sakyarati is completely free of any touch of respect, though there are clear opportunities to show respect, it is called Pranaya. So it's not that they're... that their intimacy is, let's say, like the Cowherd Boys, where they're saying, you know, that he's not that strong and I'm more strong, I can beat him in a wrestling match, you know, things like that. It doesn't get to that. It just means that there would be opportunities being in the court to offer respect, but they don't. They're just so absorbed in interacting him as a family member that they forget those things. Does that make sense? So it's a touch more. Does that work? You know, it doesn't have to be a whole ocean more. It's just,
yeah. Okay. Yes. When we compare Bhagavad Gita with the Uddhava Gita,
they're all saying the same thing. It's just be, it'll take the points farther. So the Bhagavad Gita, Uddhava Gita, and the Kapila Gita, they're all discussing the same thing. It's just there'll be more, you know, further understanding of the same points. There's not extra points.
Yes.
It's just they'll go deeper in each point. So Gita will be one level, then the Kapila Gita will take it further, and then the Uddhava Gita will take it further than that.
Okay.
Is that?
Okay. Yes. This is the Uddhava Gita is the most deeper.
Yes, of the three, but it's not that. It's still in the same basic format. Same points are being made, but you're just taking it further because there's a deeper understanding already. Because Gita is where you want to start in the study of Gita, right? Kapila Gita is the next level, and then Uddhava Gita is the last level. Does that make sense? So that's naturally, because we'll go through. In this year, we'll be going through the Kapila Gita.
Yes.
Right? But then it'll be a few years before we get to Uddhava. Right? Because that's basically in the sixth year.
Yes.
Right?
Six years?
No, the sixth year of the Bhagavatam study.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, yes.
Right? Because this is the second year of the Bhagavatam study.
Yes.
So after four more years, then we'll do that.
Yes.
You know, but now we'll be doing the Kapila Gita. Yeah. Same points. That's why Bhagavad Gita said to be the ABCs. It's not that there's more philosophical points. No, there's more detail and more depth for those points. Like that. And once you learn those points, then when you read Gita, you can see those points. You know, you can see that depth. But that it's where you start.
Can we say that Bhagavad Gita is more principle-based and everything else just gives more
detail
to those principles?
Yes, yes, you can basically say that. But in doing it, I would say that it also probably, besides the depth, it broadens it also. So you see the breadth of what it accommodates. Because otherwise, if we take it, yes, that's just the principle of engaging one's activities in the Lord's service. Mm-hmm. But then how, like we would just, I think it was Bhaktivinoda Thakur was mentioning, the activities of the mind. You know, it has, I don't remember that, but there's memory is one of them, right? And so it has five activities that it does. Those then engaged in the Lord's service then give the activities of devotional service. You know, remembrance of the Lord, surrender to the Lord, all these different aspects. So then, you know, Gita will say about, you know, the mind is connected to Krishna, surrender to Krishna, but here you get detail of what that will accomplish. Because we're just trying to get the idea of, okay, my mind should be connected to Krishna rather than just whatever I feel like. Right? You know. Like that. So that's the... Is that... O King of Yadavs, as you sit on your great throne, that same Hari stands before you like a servant and addresses you with reverence. Right? He'll render service to the Pandavas. Here he's actually in a reverential mood towards Ukrasena. You know, so because with others that they'll be in touch with Yudhishthira, but at the same time they're friends, and so here that surrender of Krishna to the devotees is greater, right? So that's that would be another symptom of that depth. Mm-hmm. Yes, what that just slowly creeps in, very slowly. 110. He says, "My Lord, please consider. Please order me, your servant, Britya. I therefore offer my constant obeisances to you and to all your relatives." Right? So he's saying, please consider this, you know. So in other words, saying, you know, I'm God, this is the way it's going down. Right? He just says, oh, my lords, please consider this. Please order me, your servant. Right? So it's not even just please order me, or, you know, what should I do? But it's please order me, your servant. Right? So it has that personal aspect to it, the relationship. Krishna enjoys a variety of relationships in Dwarka. In the majority of these, Krishna is in the role of prince. A prince acts as senior. Oh, as prince acting as senior, but in relation to Maharaj Ugrasena and other elders, Krishna adopts the role of junior. Footnote 15. Krishna's mother, Devaki, is the daughter of Ugrasena's brother, Devakar. This makes Ugrasena Krishna's grandfather's brother or maternal great-uncle. Ugrasena's son was Kamsa. Okay, so that's the... And Kamsa was Krishna's cousin.
Yeah, but Devaki will always say that, you know, it's your sister. But usually we would take it because they're brothers. Means they're
called,
what we consider brother and sister.
Means the same father. Kamsa.
Kamsa and Devaki in Krishna book?
Yes, yes.
Why are you killing your sister?
Yes, because they're cousins.
They're cousins.
But that shows just the natural in family that you just have a relationship. Like here, I remember in the Gurukul, you'd ask, you know, who's this? Oh, he's my brother. But yes. Then you have to find out what kind of brother.
Yes.
You know, is he actual, you know, from same, you know, kind of mother, father, brother, or is it their cousin brothers, or are they from the same village brothers, you know, like that, you know, see, it keeps going. So most of the time they're from the same village or same area,
yes.
You know, like that, you know, so. There were a lot of brothers. Okay. Krishna's mother is the daughter of Ugrasena's brother, Devaka. Okay, Ugrasena. Okay. So Ugrasena's son was Kamsa. Okay, so they're cousins. So that means cousins. That means Kamsa is Krishna's uncle.
Yes.
No, Kamsa.
Kamsa is his
uncle.
Yes.
Kamsa is his uncle. Yeah, because Krishna got criticized for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so that's how. But he's, I guess, cousin uncle. Hence the word Britya means servant in two senses, order carrier and maintained dependent. Krishna played both roles in relation to Ugrasena. After killing Kamsa, Krishna reinstates him on his throne. The Lord told him, O mighty king, we are your subjects, so please command us. Indeed, because of the curse of Yayati, no Yadu may sit on the royal throne. Footnote 16. This curse is related to the ninth canto pastime in which Maharaj Yayati asks his son Yadu to gift him his youth. Yadu refuses, thus inviting a curse on his dynasty. My dear son, I am not yet satisfied with my sexual desires. But if you are kind to me, you can take the old age given by your maternal grandfather, and I may take your youth so they may enjoy life for a few more years. For a few years more. Turned out to be 1,000. That, you know, yeah, but in those days they lived a while, so they worked out. Yadu replied, My dear father, you have already achieved old age, although you also were a young man. But I do not welcome your old age and invalidity, for unless one enjoys material happiness, one cannot attain renunciation. Srimad Bhagavatam 9.18.39.40. Right, so he's thinking the same point. Right, so his whole point is you know, why I should, you know, but that, you know, instead of looking at it, that father's older, so, you know, he should take care of this first, and then after that he'll get his youth back, and then he can, you know, progress in that mood of renunciation. So somehow or another it didn't work out. Srila Prabhupada comments, renunciation of material enjoyment is the ultimate goal of human life. Therefore, the Varnashram institution is more scientific. It aims at giving one the facility to return home, back to Godhead, which one cannot do without... Cannot do without completely renouncing all connections with the material world. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Niskinchanasya Bhagavad Bhajanon Mukasya. One who wants to go back home, back to Godhead, must be Niskinchana, free from all affinity for material enjoyment. Generally, unless one enjoys material happiness, one cannot attain renunciation. Varnashram, therefore, gives the opportunity for gradual elevation. Yadu, the son of Maharaj Yayati, explained that he was unable to give up his youth, for he wanted to use it to attain the renounced order in the future. So technically, then, there's not a problem in that. Right?
He wasn't incorrect.
No, he was not incorrect. But, you know, just for accommodating, then it could be there. But technically, he's not incorrect. Because it wasn't a saying, you know, I don't want to leave home. Like that. You understand. So he actually, there was a thought about it. Maharaj Yadu was different from his brothers. Maharaj Yadu's brothers refused to accept their father's proposal because they were not completely aware of Dharma. To accept orders that follow religious principles, especially the order of one's father, is very important. Therefore, when the brothers of Maharaj Yayati refused their father's order, this was certainly irreligious. Maharaj Yadu's refusal, however, was religious. You know, just like the Kumaras, they refused their father's order of populating the universe based on religious principles. It's not that Brahma didn't get upset. But, you know, they got another brother. You know, who's also, you know, had no problem being renounced. As stated in the 10th canto, Maharaj Yadu was completely aware of the principles of religion. The ultimate principle of religion is to engage oneself in devotional service to the Lord. Maharaj Yadu was very eager to engage himself in the Lord's service, but there was an impediment. During youth, the material desire to enjoy the material senses is certainly present. And unless one fully satisfies these lusty desires in youth, there's a chance of one being disturbed in rendering service to the Lord. We have actually seen that many sannyasis who accept sannyas prematurely, not having satisfied the material desires, fall down because they are disturbed. Therefore, the general process is to go through grihastha life and vanaprastha life and finally come to sannyas and devote oneself completely to the service of the Lord. Right, so that's the typical order, not sannyas, grihastha, then vanaprastha. Like, you know, it's not ideal, because then the point is in youth, we can make the endeavor and feel that you've made the effort, and having made the effort, that you're not getting the results that you unplanned, then one can be happily, then retire from that. But if you take it up in later in life, then there's always the problem that you will think that, well, if, you know, I could have done this or could have done that, but instead of that, I did this, I did that. Does that make sense? That's why it goes in that order. That's the scientific order. Does that make sense? So that's what I probably say. It's more scientific.
Is that why there's the bucket list?
It could be. Because one is supposed to take care of the list before, you know. In other words, in the bucket should be, you know, the Lord's holy name and form, quality, pastimes, instead of, you know, how you say, seeing the sunset or sunrise from the top of Kilimanjaro.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Maharaj Yadu was ready to accept his father's order and exchange youth for old age because he was confident that youth taken by his father would be returned. But because this exchange would delay his complete engagement in devotional service, he did not want to accept his father's old age. So this makes it, he was ready to, but it would get in the way of his trying to take up devotional service. Because we see Yayati, from his becoming renounced, then he could perform austerities to get himself to heavenly planets. Right? So then, if that's the exchange, then better is the devotional service. Does that make sense? But because this exchange would delay his complete engagement in devotional service, he did not want to accept his father's old age, for he was eager to achieve freedom from disturbances. Moreover, among the descendants of Yadu would be Lord Krishna. Therefore, because Yadu was eager to see the Lord's appearance in his dynasty as soon as possible, Yadu refused to accept his father's proposal. This was not irreligious. However, because Yadu's purpose was to serve the Lord. Oh, this was not irreligious, however, because Yadu's purpose was to serve the Lord. Because Yadu was a faithful servant of the Lord, Lord Krishna appeared in his dynasty. Yadu was very dear to Krishna, who was therefore eager to descend in Yadu's dynasty. Srimad Bhagavatam 9.18.40, purport. Well, that was 16. Where was 16? Ah, here. Okay. Since I am present in your entourage as your personal attendant, all the demigods and other exalted personages will come with heads bowed to offer you tribute. What then to speak of the rulers of men? Right, so the demigods are coming to offer tribute. So then men will naturally, right? But because they were, you know, the nature of what they were doing in the Yadu dynasty, so they're not the main emperors. And that, so therefore, they're not worried about, you know, becoming the kings of the world. While these others are all trying to, you know, posturing to become the big guys. But they're not. They're satisfied. Because they're just interested in serving the Lord. So even though they were the most powerful, they had the most opulence, they had whatever is anybody wanted by becoming emperor of the world, they had just by living in their city. Right? You know, small city, 10 feet, 10 miles by 10 miles. You know, it's not that big. Bigger than Monaco, but, you know, still. Yeah. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments. Krishna speaks to Ugrasena. You should be the king and you should give us orders. If you say that the Yadu should not sit on the throne because of the curse of Yayati, I say that though you are a Yadu, there is no fault if I order you to sit on the throne. If Ugrasena were to object and say he did not have the power to be king, Krishna says, if I am engaged as your servant, then all the devatas will also serve you. Sardartha Darshani, 10:45-13-14. Mm-hmm. Yes.
The speaking.
But he's sitting, you know, on top of all the. They could say because of it's a group. It's not just in his own little. The Vrishnis or something. It's amongst the Vrishnis, Bhojas, Andakas, and so then you're in a bigger position.
Position?
Yes.
And what about this curse? The others cannot help it in the story? Or it's just in the, on the bigger picture?
That I know of, it means when you're acting in the big, if you're sitting and, you know, taking care of your local group, I don't think it's a problem. But definitely, I've always heard it specifically in connection with they'll never be the emperors.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That always has to be the sun. And if there's bigger kings, the sun kings are always superior to those in the lunar dynasty.
So at the time of Pugusena, he was just the king of the Yadav Mojitland?
Yes, that's all.
And who was the emperor then?
It would have been Yudhishthira or Duryodhana. You know, it would have been the Kuris. Like that time. Yeah.
So Maharaj, it seems that the Yadu dynasty, they were always together.
Yeah, could be.
Means not really no disagreement in the family.
No, not here, no. Because they're all focused on Krishna.
Yes.
That's the point. If you focus on Krishna, then the family will stay together quite nicely.
Yes.
So that's the point. Community means that there's common values.
Yes.
So here, because Krishna is the value, then naturally then they have very strong community.
Yes.
Like that. Others, then they have their community based on that particular value. And if that value is maintained, then it stays together. If it's not, then there's a problem. So Kamsa, then... you know, being part of that dynasty, then he was, like the others, totally absorbed in samadhi on Krishna without any deviation. Though, there was a slight, the intent was slightly different than the other Yadavas. So then it was a bit of a problem. Because you know, they valued favorable meditation on Krishna rather than unfavorable. Uddhava also told Vidura, Krishna used to stand before King Ugrasena, who was sitting on the royal throne, and submit explanations before him, saying, O my Lord, please let it be known to you. Does it not pain us, Krishna's servitors, when we remember this? Right. Does this mean these mosquitoes are... they've developed a resistance to smoke or something, or just...
Somehow the small ones, they not affect us as much as the big ones.
In the smaller lungs?
They don't understand what this is all.
Oh, okay, yeah. Bigger ones are more tuned in. Narada concludes that all of the Vaishnavas he has visited thus far, of all the Vaishnavas he's visited, Ugrasena is the greatest. Narada offers homage to him and to everyone who has any relationship with him. Sri Pariksit said, the Yadavas were all faithful followers of the Supreme Lord, the Lord who favors the Brahmins. Dear Mother, Sri Pariksit said, those Yadavas then bowed down together to the great sage, touched his feet, and spoke to him as follows. The fortunate Yadavas said, even our Supreme Master Sri Krishna worships you. Why then, O venerable sage, are you acting like a lowly person by offering respects to us, the most lowly? Because he came, he wouldn't accept their worship, he's offering respects to them, and like that. 13. You can defeat the wit of even Brahma, the master of speech. And so, by the power of our Lord Yadavendra, what you have said to us cannot be untrue. On one hand, the Yadavas listening to Narada are inclined to discount Narada's description of themselves as exaggerated flattery. Thus they call Narada the most expert word juggler. On the other hand, when Krishna is personally involved, anything is possible. They are his family members, and Narada is one of the eternal Vaikuntha associates. So they are forced to accept Narada's statements as true. 114. If one has even a slight trace of a touch with Krishna, is there anything one cannot achieve? Krishna is a boundless reservoir of mercy, and one's unconditional, Nirupadi, best friend. But so he's a friend without any upadi, right? There's not that there's some definition connecting it. He's the Lord, or he's this, or he's that. He's just the friend. True compassion originates in Krishna, or in other words, only Krishna's pure devotees can be truly compassionate. The special quality in true compassion is that it is unconditional. Krishna and the devotees who convey mercy on his behalf never expect any reciprocal favors. They freely distribute mercy to anyone who will take it. This is the meaning of the words Nirupadi and Ahaituka, often seen in descriptions of Krishna's mercy. Or Nirupadi may also mean to the person, it's not that they have some qualification, therefore then they get mercy. It's just distributed despite. You know, therefore, the point, causeless. 115. He is the ocean of all greatness. Simply remembering him assures all success. He is the master and the only shelter of the most fallen, the provider of everything desirable to those who have nothing to possess. Krishna is not satisfied with merely fulfilling the ambitions of his devotees. He likes to bestow on his devotees more than they ever desire. Intelligent like Sudama Vipra was probably just expecting, you know, maybe a cow or something. Right? Not the, you know, opulence greater than Indra. But, as we see, his wife was not complaining.
No.
Right? Yeah, comes home. Nice. Like that. So it seems Sudama Vipra set a high standard.
So,
Yes. Yeah. Intelligent person should take shelter of this great quality of his. Which is like a vast ocean, deep and certain. Krishna's mercy need not take long to achieve, and it pays little regard to the qualifications of those who receive it. But the point is, you know, As Narada says here, as soon as one remembers Krishna, one's success is guaranteed. So it's just, if one has even a slight touch with Krishna, is there anything one cannot achieve? Right? Krishna is a boundless reservoir of mercy and one's unconditional best friend. So that's it. Regardless of the purpose of one's endeavor. So even if it's being done, and it's not so much, it's not done in pure devotion, but if it's done in connection with Krishna, you still get benefit. Right? That's the whole point, is and how much benefit. Because in the other things, if everything's not right, it doesn't work. Karma, jnana, it just doesn't work. If the attitude's wrong, or if the ritual is wrong, something's wrong, it just doesn't function. But in devotional service, if there's anything connected to the Lord, even if you don't know it, you still get benefit. You know? Just like that, Prabhupada tells the story of I'm not sure, who was in Vrindavan, but the thief who came in was stealing the jewelry, but he was being very careful on taking, because, you know, it's Krishna. And then as he was going out, then there was a stone in the floor that had gone crooked, so he put it nice and everything, you know, and then he left. You know, so then, you know, it says that mood of you know, consideration of something for Krishna then has a very great effect.
So he undressed Krishna, basically.
Yeah. So it's not based on what you're doing. It's just that connection. Yeah, it's connected to Krishna. And then the attitude. Then there's that story that Prabhupada tells about in Vrindavan. He's specifically talking about Vrindavan here.
the thief goes to Krishna and prays that he'll be successful, and the police goes to Krishna and prays they'll be successful. So whoever's the most sincere wins. So it has nothing to do with the irregular, you know, system.
Even if one's intentions are off target, when one becomes absorbed in remembering Krishna, Krishna reciprocates by helping one adjust those intentions. How is that possible? That was a fast 12 minutes. I'm sure it was only 5 minutes. Okay, so we'll stop here.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Hare.